The single most important thing you can do today is to create and deliver a better experience for your customers. Learn how sales, marketing, and customer success experts create internal alignment, achieve desired outcomes, and exceed customer expectations in a personal and human way. This is the Customer Experience Podcast. Here's your host, Ethan Butte.
You can't multiply your way out of complexity. You must first simplify before you can multiply. We should be selling the way our customers actually want to buy. Those are just two of many things I've learned from today's guest. He's a sales expert, author, speaker, and executive coach. He's the founder and president of Shore Consulting, the number one new home sales training company for teams and leaders. Jeff Shore, welcome to the Customer Experience Podcast.
It's a pleasure being here. And I have to just credit real quick. You can't multiply out of complexity. That's Adrienne Duffy, not Jeff Shore. It's just something that as soon as she said it, I went, oh my goodness, you just described my life right here, trying to multiply out of complexity. No wonder I can't get anything done. And when we started beating everything in the company with a simple stick, it allowed us to multiply. So I just want to make sure credit goes where credit is due on that one.
Yeah, please. I felt like I knew that. I couldn't remember the attribution. I figured you'd pick me up. So I appreciate you doing that. And by the way, I mean, just full respect for that. I can't believe how often I see things parroted online that A, misrepresents the original idea in some fundamental way, and or rather than giving attribution or credit, they're actually intentionally taking it. And I didn't mean to do that on your behalf, but it's shocking how often that happens.
No. It's the death of ethics right there. I was in a presentation once at the Builder Show years ago, and there I don't have a lot of original thought, but there are a few things that I've tried to sort of make sure that there's a Jeff Shore at the end of it. And somebody up in front of a room of about 400 people on a slide had a quote of mine, no attribution or anything, but it's something that I'm, and the interesting thing was that it was the type of environment where people in the audience would have known, wait a minute, that's not his, that's Jeff Shore. So I go up to him after, and he knew I was there, right? He goes, Jeff, I used your quote. It's like, yes, I noticed. you forgot something, but I noticed. Yeah,
it's so interesting. Anyway, I have a number of questions there, but I'm going to jump into our standard opener and we may revisit this idea of where I was at in my head was the power of, this is not a great example of it, which is why we don't need to dive into it. But this idea of your teaching becoming so much a part of the popular conversation or culture within a community in particular, let's say, that it transcends any source. And then you know your ideas have really been taken to scale and it's a mixed blessing sometimes, but stealing is a whole different story. Jeff, when I say customer experience, what does that mean to you?
Well, look, you know, you could look at it this a couple of different ways, right? We can talk about how a customer feels, but that's sort of, you know, trite and maybe even a little hackneyed at this point. So I like to take it from a different perspective and think about how the customer will feel. And I've really been diving in recently to an emerging branch of psychology that's referred to as prospective psychology. It's the psychology of the future or how we will feel about the future. And when we're in decision-making mode, you know, our gut takes over, emotion takes over, but we run these little mental simulations. And, you know, for me, as somebody in the sales world, every decision that gets made according to the expected outcomes. Now that's Psych 101. You're going to learn that right away in your first day of decision-making theory, that you make decisions according to the expected outcomes. But I think the important extrapolation of that is that you make decisions according to how you will feel about the expected outcomes. So when I think about the customer experience, it's about how they feel and about how they will feel. And that's the idea. So, you know, just a real simple example, if I could here, a couple of years ago, my wife and I had the opportunity to have dinner at the French Laundry in Yountville, one of the best restaurants, you know, a Thomas Keller restaurant, one of the best restaurants in the world. But the price tag on that dinner comes to about $400 a person, you know, before the wine. And so you don't make that decision simply based on how good the meal is going to be. It's a holistic decision that's based on how you will feel after the experience. That's prospective psychology. You run this mental simulation and you ask yourself, how am I going to feel if I do this? And if I feel good, I move forward. If I feel bad, then I pull the plug on it. But to me, that's a big big part of that customer journey story. It's about how they're going to feel into the future.
Really good. I appreciate the call to prospective psychology and this anticipation piece. It makes me think a lot about something that's critical. And we talk about from time to time on the show, which is expectation management. Talk about the role of the service or product provider, the work of marketing or even a salesperson in helping someone anticipate the feelings on the other end. Because there's something about, because I think that the whether or not we are going to choose to refer someone, right? The, like there's a neutral state where it's like, eh, it's fine. And we're only going to say that if someone asks us. There's the proactivity of like, you have to get to the French Laundry. It is, you're going to pay for it, but it's going to be so, you know, and then there's also the, it wasn't all that, you know, that was good, but I really only have $200 ahead for that experience. Like talk about the role of expectation management related to this.
Well, it's an interesting question because generally when we think about expectation management, we think about processes. We think about this is what's going to happen. Here's how it's going to happen. And you have to do here, this here and that there. And we're going to call you about this. So everything is around the process. The problem is that processes are typically designed more for the organization than they are for the customer. So when we start thinking about expectation management in terms of the emotion, that's where the game changer comes into place because it comes into play because it is that customer's emotion that we are driving towards. And we have to begin by asking the question, what will excite this customer? What will trigger that positive emotion such that the customer is stepping into their own future? You know, Martin Seligman has at University of Pennsylvania has a great quote about this. He says, what if we are not homo sapiens, meaning wise man, but rather homo prospectus? Seeing man or envisioning man is probably the best interpretation there. And so as we can help our customers not just understand what the journey is, but how the customer will feel during the journey. So just a really simple example, you know, I live in the home building world, and one of the things that customers have to do is that they have to go through the mortgage process. Well, that's not the fun part as far as they're concerned, right? You got to expose all your financial warts. You got to go into this customer experience thinking this is going to be akin to an IRS audit. So how great would it be if they got a video from their loan officer before they met to say, hey, listen, you know, before we go in, let me just set the stage here for you for what you can expect. I'm here to help answer any questions. There's no reason why we can't make this as an enjoyable process. And maybe even just a quick overview of what's going to happen here. And now, rather than, you know, walking through the doors expecting this horrendous experience where the negative emotion sets off a negative state of mind, now I'm going to dealing with a nice, kind person who is willing to walk me through this. I mean, what a gift to a customer to let them know in advance, not just what will happen, but how we expect them to feel about that. That's really powerful.
It is. There's so many things you triggered there for me that I really enjoy. One is this idea that there is a transfer of emotion. That's a key element. And so someone being able to show up in a video, which is another layer I really appreciate, to set the tone and to acknowledge you may feel some degree of vulnerability. You might even, now you're not going to say these words out loud, but you can communicate as a thoughtful, empathetic, expert person who's here to guide and manage the process for somebody. It is like an audit. I mean, this is everything, right? Like you're revealing your entire financial past, good, bad, ugly, and everything in between. And so that like acknowledging that someone might be feeling that way and offering to kind of like lower the stakes, lower the confusion, lower the stress of it. I'm here alongside you. That is my role here. I'm blah, 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 blah. At the risk of asking what may be a slightly self-serving question as a longtime team member at BombBomb who helps people do what you just described, why is it so important to do that in a video? You didn't say send an email kind of describing this thing. You said share a video. And there are a lot of different ways to do that. But talk, now I'm bridging a course into why a human being, but any thoughts on the video piece in particular?
Just a quick anecdote here. I'm thinking of a story I heard from a client. Actually, I watched the video from the client. But there was a lady who was searching for a home. This is in Austin, Texas. And she's calling to different communities. And she's saying to salespeople in a tone of voice that is somewhat acrid, I need to have a home site that backs up to trees. if I come out there and you show me a home site that backs up to another home, I am not going to be, I mean, she's very, very clear on her expectations. And it's a defensive, it's a fear posture right from the very beginning. I think in her mind, you are a salesperson. You are there to try and steer me into something that I don't want. I'm not going to let that happen. I'm letting you know that. So she's calling different offices and she makes an appointment with this one salesperson. His name is Blake. And he assures her that he has a wooded lot. So he gets off the phone with her and he starts thinking, you know, boy, she's got some hangups. She's got some history here, right? She's carrying her history or her perceptions about salespeople into this conversation. And I know she's calling all over town. So how do I get a leg up? So he grabs his phone. He walks out to a wooded home site. He opens his BombBomb app and he records a quick little video. And he's standing with the home site behind him. And he says, you know, hi, Sheila. I told you it would. I just thought maybe I would show you in advance. And here it is. And we're going to keep these trees. And you can see behind it's a nature reserve. And that, you know, the camera's moving and you got half of his nose in the picture. It's the rawness, I think, that actually makes it more real and more authentic as he does that. But the key here is not that Sheila gets to see the wooded lot. The key here is that Sheila gets to see Blake. And before she pulls up to the community for the first time, she can see this is a good guy. He's a nice guy. He's not overly polished. He's not a slickster. There's a level of trust that's based on likability that she will bring into this conversation. And now Blake has a tremendous leg up because you know nobody else is doing it. So if she's got five different appointments that she's made, there is one that stands out. And she's already crossed that barrier before she gets there. Every other salesperson is going to have to start from scratch when she pulls up. But Blake has already gotten there. Now you look and you go, what did it cost him? Oh, I don't know. 2 minutes? I mean, that's about it. But the idea that he triggered not just the emotion in the product, but the emotion in himself is critical to the story.
Yeah, so good. I mean, I have so many follow-up questions. I kind of want to double back briefly because we may go alongside this again because of your psychology-based approach to selling, and the human does play a very unique role there. You mentioned likability. We'll peel into that just to kind of close down customer experience explicitly for a moment. When did this term come onto your radar? I mean, you are a prolific content creator. You've been writing, speaking, teaching, all of these things for a long time. You've probably, as you look back, whenever you started using the term, if you even choose to use it, you're really talking about aspects of it all along. Like, when did this come onto your radar?
Yeah, so I worked for a very, very large home builder. And I'm going to say at the time, now they dare say that they've evolved since. But when I worked for them, a customer experience was not high on the radar. The customer was an important asset in the acquisition of revenue to meet the business plan. I mean, I hate to be so blunt about it, but that was the case. So it wasn't until I went on my own and I started working with clients who were really excellent in the world of customer experience. And I started to see what was possible. And that sort of opened my eyes. And then I just, like you, now it's a customer experience journey. Or my customer experience antenna is very, very high in my life in general, on the positive and the negative. So, you know, whether it's our local donut shop over here, or what's going to happen at an Apple store over there, or, you know, why Kmart went out of business. So, you know, all of these things are based on that customer experience antenna. But I would dare say that I learned this from working with clients who were fully committed and learning that I had to up my customer experience game a lot. I had to study this hard because it was not the environment that I was raised in.
Yeah, so much learning to be done. I'm so glad that A, I have the privilege of hosting this podcast, and B, get to have these conversations. I guess it's my own version of your consulting experience of exposure to a variety of people in a variety of roles in a variety of industries, all around this core concept of how do we create and deliver better experiences for people. Would you agree that this is one of the best, if not the best, differentiators going forward? I mean, think home building isn't as pure play a commodity as some of its adjacencies. I think mortgage is much more commoditized. I think real estate agency, broadly speaking, is much more commoditized. I think there's some unique things about, you know, lots and homes, but I would also assume that customer experience is a fantastic differentiator here. How do you think about it in terms of differentiation?
You know, it's so funny. I've actually picked up a book here that I was reading yesterday and I marked a quote. I'm looking through it real quick from Tim Ferriss, and I'm having a hard time finding it. But he was talking about the idea that most people, here it is. 99% of people, and by the way, this is taken from 10X is easier than 2X. This is Dan Sullivan's new book. It's not out yet, but I have an advanced copy. It's fantastic.
Nice.
He says, this is Tim Ferriss. 99% of people in the world are convinced they are incapable of achieving great things, and so they aim for the mediocre. The level of competition is thus fiercest for, quote, realistic goals, paradoxically making them the most time and energy consuming. And I think when it comes to customer experience, that's exactly what we're talking about, that people don't think that they can run with the big boys of customer experience. They don't think they can be groundbreaking and innovative and be the type of organization that people are going to write books about or talk about on podcasts. And so they aim for customer service, right? Or customer satisfaction. They lower the bar for themselves because they can't envision it happening. Now they're competing at a level of mediocrity that everybody else is competing for. And the customer sees this. I haven't talked to one person in the last 3 years who would disagree with me that the customer experience weakened dramatically over the last few years, and the customer expectations have gone down as well. Again, the paradox is that providing a great customer experience is easier now than it's ever been, but companies just don't seem to want to do this. They don't have the guts to do that. They don't have the vision power to do that or whatever the case might be. But I would argue that the reason that it's difficult is because it's easier to change processes than it is to change cultures. And if your culture is already defined as one that is, let's get the bare minimum done so that people don't hate us. If that's what your culture is, that's a hard culture to change. You'd be much better off opening your organization, beginning your organization with the idea that let's design this around an incredible customer experience. Let's just go to, let's sail in blue water right here and get out of the mucky port and see what the opportunities are. But I just think there are cultural issues that hold organizations back.
Yes, interesting too, as you talk about process versus culture, they both affect each other. You know, you can make strides in one and get some halo effect on the other. I think a lot of culture is sometimes a lack of process affects it one way or the other. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It depends on, you know, what you're really trying to get done there. But I appreciate the call out to the mediocrity, and it has been brutal. I think a lot of, and by that I'm speaking as a customer now who, you know, buys from a variety of people, a variety of things. It has been really bad. And really, the one word that jumps out to me here that I'd love to have you react to or riff on is consistency. You know, a longtime friend of mine and BombBombs, and he's featured in our second book, Human-Centered Communication, Shep Hyken, his philosophy on customer service and customer experience is being slightly better than average almost all of the time, you know, and that alone gets you into the books. It's like, I don't know how they do it, but every single time, ... And it's not necessarily this mind-blowing thing in these, you know, kind of one-off stories of surprise and delight, but it's really the, and so when you think about the amount of turnover that we had, whether it was actual quitting or quiet quitting or any of these other, you know, the resignation, all these other kind of trends and labels we put on things, I think the turnover was part of it because it erodes some of the culture. And it also means that you need to train back up a whole bunch of people into something that maybe was maybe soft in culture, soft in process, whatever. Talk about the role of consistency. And I guess what I just did there in that overly long setup where I asked a question, kind of spoke to it, is that there's just all of those dynamics create an inconsistency and a significant disruption in whatever good was already established.
Yeah, look, going back to Shep for a moment, I've known Shep for years, and I take his point and tying that back into what you said, there's culture and then there's process. And I think what he was talking about more is on the process side, right? Just consistently doing things a little bit better. That's where your processes are set up.
Yeah.
The cultural side says, now, how do we take that up a notch and even individually look for those opportunities for customer experiences that are cultivated for individual customers? What do we do here so that based on what I know about that customer, I have this curated experience that comes from that? So there are things that you can and should do in your processes that can make a huge difference. But just a little example from Will Goddard's book, Unreasonable Hospitality. So when you look at Will Goddard, the previous owner of 11 Madison Park, at one point rated the number one restaurant in the world because of their experiences. When you look at the process side, what did he do? He got rid of the hostess stand. And so every afternoon at 3 o'clock, the hostess, they would come in and they would go on social media and they would do web searches for everybody who had a reservation just so they could find a photo. And they got rid of the hostess stand. And now they could greet somebody when they walk through the door and say, Mr. and Mrs. Lee, thank you so much for dining with us today. We're so happy to see you, right? Because that's it. That's a process that makes a little difference. But then you look at it and you think about the story that's told in the book of overhearing a customer say, we've had the best meal ever. We had everything in our trip to New York except for a dirty water hot dog, a street hot dog. So somebody overhears this, goes down the street, buys a dirty water hot dog, takes it back to the chef, has them divide it in four, dress up the plate in 11 Madison Park style, and say, there, now you can say you've had the dirty water hot dog. So it's this blend, right? There are the processes that allow us to be at least a little bit better at everything we do, and we do consistently. And then there are the curated opportunities that we learn. And if you can do both of those things, that's when you're miles ahead of everybody else. Because let's face it, the dirty water hot dog, that's the story people tell. That's the story people tell for a long, long time.
Yeah, it's the one that you just told now. I mean, that's another thing that's fun about this podcast is you hear these stories. And I really love the way that example perfectly drew out the relationship between process and culture. The culture says, act on the things that you overhear. The process doesn't. You can't, that's not a process thing.
Right.
And something else, by the way, that you and Shep share, of course, is Dan Sullivan. I don't know if that's how you guys connected, but he turned me on to Dan's teachings.
He's a hero in the National Speakers Association. So that's how we connected. But yes, I do know that he's very big on Dan Sullivan. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So diving deeper in, but taking a different turn on process versus culture, I would assume safely, because you're an avid consumer, you're a great connector, you're involved in a variety of different things, you're surveying the scene broadly, you're doing it thoughtfully, as you've already described, and more importantly, demonstrated in this conversation. We're only 20 some minutes in. I assume that you're looking a lot at this intersection or at the parallel tracks of culture and process, at what's going on with technology, and you probably have been for years. And I would love your perspective, wherever you want to take it, on the relationship between humans and technology, how you're seeing people make really good decisions about where not to over-automate, what to unburden humans of, et cetera, and maybe some of the other ways around these themes, like broad thoughts on humans and technology, either from a historical perspective at this moment in time, how you're perhaps advising people how to think about how to implement technology or where. Any thoughts that any of that triggers for you? I'd love to start a track around that.
Yeah, sure. Well, a couple of things. As you know, I'm deeply interested in what's happening next, what we're about to see. Reading a chapter at a time, Peter Diamandis' book, The Future is Faster Than You Think. It's both exciting and disturbing at the same time. I can only read a chapter at a time because I have to sit it down and let it marinate for a while in my brain. So I'm very interested. And of course, Ethan, I had you on one of our webinars recently to talk about this. I am cautiously optimistic about things like AI. I know there's a lot of talk about, well, what happens when AI takes over the world? And, I'm not really that much of an alarmist along those lines. I think that we're hopefully smart enough human beings to put safeguards around AI. But I guess I have to start that conversation by going back to technologies that have been used or underutilized but that are massively ubiquitous and sometimes for the wrong reasons. And so I got to go back to email on this one, Ethan. I really, really do. I've come to the point where I wish email was never invented. I mean, it is the most abused, horrific, especially in the sales world. The amount of time that email should be used is about 5% of the time that it's actually used. I am not happy with what's gone on in email over time. And I'm not just talking about spam here. I'm talking about how it is utilized by influence practitioners. And now, having said that, I send sales emails. You know, so it's a game that almost has to be played, but I hate the game. Now, the reason, though, that I hate it more than anything else is because we default to what is easy without thinking about what is right, or what is easy versus what is effective. So the easiest thing in the world for me to do is send an email to a client saying, hey, you know this beautiful thing that you ordered over here? Yeah, they don't make it anymore. And your dreams have now been shattered. Have a nice day. You know, it's easier to do that over an email, but it's not what the customer wants. And it's not what the customer needs. So, you know, I think we have to evaluate old technologies here before we look at that. Now, the flip side of that is that we were talking about video earlier. And I'm going to challenge anybody to go back and look at my entire body of work when I say this. This is going to sound like, because of Ethan's affiliation with BombBomb, that I'm trying to kowtow to the host here. Trust me, you look at my body of work, you're going to see that this is not the case. The underutilization of video floors me. And I'm not talking about, you know, highly leveraged drone video with a beautiful soundtrack behind it. That's great. If you can pull it off, that's great. I'm talking about any video, any client communication video, any prospecting video, any update video. It's crazy that it's not being used still. I mean, you know, at the time we're recording this, it's 2023. How is video still not a thing for so many people? So look, those are old school technologies at this point, but one mightily abused and one horribly underutilized. And before we start talking about advancements in AR, which by the way are stunning these days, we've got to go back and look at the fundamental technologies first.
Agree. In so many different ways. I would just, I guess, just to stay in video, in whether it's kowtowing or not, and it isn't, but I appreciate this conversation because I don't get to have it with enough people in a really thoughtful way. I would just observe back to your underused observation. A, totally agree, despite my best efforts over the past dozen years in my capacity here at BombBomb. But something I've long said, one of the things I get to do is when we hire, you know, X number of new employees, I get to represent the marketing team in an onboarding kind of around the company tour that this new cohort of employees gets to go around, get a little exposure to the faces and philosophies and approaches of the different teams and see how they're all structured and that type of a thing. And one of the elements that I always include is the fact, I think it's true, my own self-prescribed observation is fact, that our biggest impediment to growth, not just as a company at BombBomb, but of this idea of video in place of faceless typed out text in more places because it's better. By the way, it's great for bad news, to your example earlier of like typing this out is not the same as someone being able to feel your sincerity and to feel that's that right. They're alongside you and being sorry that this can't happen even though you want it to. That's a thing and it matters. And that softens the whole situation as long as it's sincere. But it's my observation is that human vulnerability is the single biggest impediment to growth of this concept, movement, and practice. I think people can't get over the way that they look and sound and am I doing this right and all of these things. Have you observed the same?
Yeah, I think that's they're going to have to get over it because here come the millennials who are the video generation. And I think that it's going to be less of a thing going forward. But to your point, it's very difficult to communicate emotion in an email. And if you communicate bad news in an email and now your customer is sending you an emotion-based email back, well, they can communicate emotion, but it's not going to be pretty. So there is that opportunity here to get comfortable with something that just makes so much sense. But look, like I'm just would encourage anyone listening to this podcast right now to recognize that when we are uncomfortable, it's always based on a lack of familiarity. It's repetition that takes it from that discomfort into the comfortable. Just lean into it. Just lean into it. It's too valuable not to.
And I'm sure in your training, you're probably seeing this issue that I've dwelled in for years across a variety of things that you're trying to encourage and motivate and educate people around. And one of the spots I thought you were going to go to, and I'm curious to know if this, how this fits into your engagement with different people and all the different channels that you engage people through, is the phone. You know, people are afraid of calling people. And so, you know, I know a number of coaches in the zones that you and I both spend a lot of time in. And, you know, part of it is just holding people accountable for picking up the phone, which seems crazy, but it's also this like discomfort. It's like, I'm not comfortable doing it. Therefore, I'm not confident in it. Therefore, my confidence comes through because we're creating a human to human moment. That's why we want to get on the phone. That's why we want to send a video. And so that lack of confidence, like you're already, you know, starting out of a hole. If someone chooses to click play or someone chooses to pick up the phone, if you're not confident in it, it's kind of a catch 22.
It is indeed, and could not agree more. I mean, that the phone is foreign. There is an organization in Dallas, Texas that does an assessment for salespeople. Are you going to be good at sales or not in sales? And one of the, they put a whole list of potential threats as you test into this. And one of them is telephobia. They just call it telephobia, right? Do you have a fear of making phone calls? It's a thing. Apparently it's a thing. But I would look at it, and just as a, if I could be advisory in this to influence practitioners right now, what if you finished one conversation, maybe it was a face-to-face conversation, and there's a follow-up call that needs to be made? Why not record a quick video to say, thank you, I really appreciated getting to know you. I'm going to do a little research on this and I'll call you by 5 o'clock today. Have a good day. Now, what you just did is you sent a bomb with a thank you. It was sincere. You confirmed that there is work to be done and you made a commitment to them and to yourself that you will call them at 5 o'clock. So now you've increased the chances that A, you're going to make the call, and B, that they're going to receive it. So if just a quick little 15 second exercise will make this so much easier on both parties by the time it's time to actually make the call.
Yeah, it's really good. And again, it's this, now you've got me thinking about expectation management for ourselves. I mean, it is a process piece, but I think if people committed to that, and episode 250 was dedicated to a process for identifying and committing to and implementing with clarity video messages and specific moments that have specific value to the relationship and therefore to your business and your business outcomes. I think that's another trap people fall into. They hear something like this, they don't dwell in the thought long enough to understand what the video message is actually about. I would also accuse a number of people in the space of selling it as a gimmick because people want to buy it as a gimmick, as opposed to being basically thoughtful about what's going on here, which is, again, creating human-to-human moments in an asynchronous manner because we don't have enough contact with our customers, our prospects, our referral partners, other strategic partners. It's just the way that we live and work now. And so this is the idea of like a little human-to-human moment in between, if we're lucky enough to get them, real in-person moments. And with that, I guess I'll turn it into I'll give it back to you because you've been so kind in spending conversation in this zone around video messaging, which of course I'm deeply passionate about. You know, I look forward to meeting you in person in July in Nashville at your event. Talk about the balance that you've seen, the shift that you've seen perhaps over the past couple of decades in human to human. You're bringing a whole bunch of people in your community together, not just for education. It's not just about what happens on the stages and in the panels and all of these other elements. It's about the people themselves getting together as well, but in a more direct commercial context. Talk about the shifts you've seen in in-person versus mediated, whatever the medium is, interaction, and any kind of pros, cons, tips, feel free to provide advice to people around that zone as well. There's something to getting together in person as much work as it is.
Well, certainly COVID validated that. When you look at, I play hockey a couple of nights a week, and on one of my teams, there's a psychologist on the team, and he has a teaching practice, then he has a counseling practice. I remember asking him the question during COVID, shortly after we started playing again, after everything had shut down, I said, what happened to your business? And he just said, it just went nuts. I mean, he said, I've never had to say no more often. And then I've never had to deal with the same malady over and over and over again. When suddenly green lights started going on around the country and people started coming out of the basement, there was a different type of interaction, an I miss you interaction. And I think that we've done the sales and marketing summit for years and years and years. And then suddenly we're doing it virtually, right? We did it out of a studio 1 year and it went as well as it could be over a Zoom call. But when we met live the next time, you could tell it was a hybrid event like many did. There was a live event and then we had it going simulcast over here on Zoom. But the level of engagement and experience was totally different. And the people who were willing to be live were throwing their arms around other people's necks and saying, you're a human being. And I'm not trying to put this all on COVID. I'm trying to put this on the idea that, to your point, that direct one-on-one communication is critical to what happens. And, you know, I think societally, you know, we used to meet in bowling alleys and Elks lodges, and now we binge watch, you know, Netflix by ourselves or with our significant on the sofa. It's not the same experience. And so I wonder if we're not going to see more of that going forward where people are looking at it. I mean, listen, that's what people are trying to do with, you know, with VR chat rooms. It's like, no, you can have it both. And I still don't think it's going to be the same any more than Zoom is the same as talking to somebody face to face.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, some of the AR, VR stuff that we're seeing does add a dimensionality that Zoom doesn't have. You know, it's flat. But it's also like there's something, I'm looking at you on my screen. We're recording this in Riverside, by the way, great platform. There's something about looking at you in your, what I assume is your office or your home office. It's nicely set up. You have your books at hand, which is just awesome. You're able to pull from them and read quotes out of them in the course of conversation. There's something about seeing you, Jeff, on my screen as flat as you are. Mm-hmm. That even if we add an additional dimension in a different type of kind of 3D-ish interaction, I'm just speaking human to human here. There's a difference about demonstrating a product or walking someone through a home, these types of things where that adds a really significant benefit. I just think about, I'm thinking about avatars and bubble heads and representations of ourselves where we've bought digital sneakers because we still care about our identity in this space, but it's a representation of what you think you are or who you want to portray yourself as. I mean, there's a creativity element there, but it still leaves me very short. And to your what I think I heard there is that it isn't necessarily, even though it's more immersive, it's not necessarily better than this flat mediated experience through my laptop screen.
Well, okay, but if you, let's contrast here just a little bit.
Please.
If I'm at a wedding reception, if I'm at a cocktail party or whatever it is, and I'm having a one-on-one conversation, and I'm talking to somebody who's giving me one of these. Oh, what's that? Oh, yeah. We know how shallow and empty we feel. Like, hello, I'm here, right? And yet I'm not getting that respect. Well, I take that and magnify it 10 times on your typical Zoom call. Right. So right here, it's one-on-one. You and I can have that direct interaction. You would know if I was checking emails right now. But in a virtual setting, it's much easier to be distracted by what's going on around me than it is face-to-face, one-on-one. There's something very pure about the one-on-one relationship. And I just think about, you know, my own experience. It's unpaid, but I'm on the pastoral staff at my church. And just what happens before and after the service is just, it's beautiful. It's just beautiful. And it's testimony to the fact that we are designed as humans to be communal and not even communal over the phone, although it's better than sending an email. We're designed as humans to be face-to-face. We've got to do more of that.
Totally agree. I would love for you to share with folks, this is something that's spinning in my head, like someone in our space has, you know, dropped a ChatGPT interface into a video platform to help generate sales scripts on the fly. And I'm like, I kind of get it, but intellectually, I deeply struggle with the idea that if I had the opportunity to be in front of my customer right now, which is the opportunity or prospect, which is the opportunity that video message gives you, I don't know what to say to them versus, you know, what you just shared, which is this idea of we just shared this experience together and now in an unstructured communal environment, we can have some spontaneity. We can talk about what we saw, heard, or felt. We can talk about it like in the shared experience that we just had. We can talk about what's happened since the last time we saw each other. It's like in so many cases, we don't struggle with what to say and how to connect with people. And I think once people warm those muscles back up, especially people that moved into more of a hermit type of posture through the pandemic experience and relished the opportunity to do so. You know, once you shake off some of that rust, we're all there. Like, any thoughts on...
Yeah, let's call something what it is right here, that this triggered something that I've been thinking about a lot recently. By nature, I am an introvert.
Me too.
Now, some people would look at it. It's been misunderstood what an introvert is. It all has to do with how you get your energy, right? Whether you get your energy from being around people or you restore your energy being alone. But it has been sort of glamorous more recently to call yourself an introvert. And Matthew Pollard wrote a book called The Introvert's Edge, celebrating what introverts do and how they have an advantage over everybody else. And after a while, you start using it as a crutch, or better yet, a shield to hide behind. So look, I may be an introvert, but that does not give me a hall pass to sit in my hotel room during a conference when I could be doing some very powerful networking and building relationships with people. But what we're talking about here, I think more than anything else, is comfort addictions. It's more comfortable. It's not just that it's easier to write an email, it's more comfortable to write an email. And I remember I got this lesson from Cassandra on my team years ago. We were at the International Builder Show. We're walking down through the convention hall. And every 10 feet, Cassandra would find, Mark, Cassandra, they'd hug and chat. Let me go another 10 feet. Shelly, Cassandra, they'd hug. I'm like, how do you know all these people? And Cassandra said, well, because I walk up to them and I say, hi, my name is Cassandra, and who are you? I said, your problem is, normally, when we're at a conference, you're up in your hotel room answering emails. And it's true. Why? Because it's more comfortable. And so I think it's that comfort addiction that is at the root cause of the issue. If we're being honest with ourselves, we're just rewarding that own comfort desire side of us and then hanging it behind a banner of, well, I'm an introvert. What are you going to do?
Yeah, really, really good observation. And now you're drawing me back into this video messaging conversation. That is it. So when I have the privilege, and I've had it in hundreds, if not thousands of times, to talk with people who've been successful and unsuccessful in this new motion of video messaging. Again, when I say vulnerability, I mean, I don't like the way I feel when I put myself at risk of judgment and rejection as a human being, because that's deeply challenging for a social species. Like it used to, the consequences were fatal millennia ago. They're not today, but it's still in us, right? Like we have not evolved the way that technology has, not as quickly, certainly. We're just like barely adapting and hanging on, some of us. And so, you know, when I hear things like, well, it didn't work for me, or no one watched my videos, or, you know, the more obvious one that's immediately adjacent to this issue that you're describing is, well, I'm not a video person. Like there are all these things, but as you kind of ask into it, two or three more layers of tell me more about that. Why do you think that? Why did you say it that way? Why, you know, these kinds of things, you immediately get back to this core idea of, I'm not comfortable doing it. Therefore, I have layers of reasons. And so for you checking your email, I bet you get a hell of a lot of email, right? Like it does need to be checked and cleared and managed. And that allows you to rationalize your way out of something you don't want to do as much.
Yeah. I think what happens is that we all know, we learned it in school, that the number one job of the brain is to keep us alive. And so our brains carry a heightened threat sensitivity. And when we face discomfort and our brain interprets it as a threat, then it's naturally going to tell us to run away. Dr. Mark Schoen at UCLA wrote a great book about this. It's called Your Survival Instinct is Killing You. And that paradoxical title, it sums up the theme, as you would imagine, for the entire book. We're relying on that inner gauge that says, oh no, we're uncomfortable, I might die, right? This is just the primitive nature of man, and it's not serving us well. Daniel Kahneman in Thinking Fast and Slow writes about the law of least effort. The human brain is always looking for the easiest way to do anything. And so it's not a question when it comes to direct communication, whether it's easy, it's a question of whether it's right. It's not a question of whether it's a comfortable thing to do. It's a question of whether it's the right thing to do. And if we frame it that way, now we go full circle around the customer experience. What's best for the customer experience? That's what changes everything here. As if I'm making decisions according to my comfort or my perceived threat or whatever it is, I'm going to find a way, a creative way with a nice juicy rationalization to go into another direction. But if I'm asking what's right for the customer, that's the game changer to me.
Really good. And that's a great callback to the beginning of the conversation. Just such an important underlying philosophy and a thing to ponder on as you're reflecting on what improvements you can make in your business, your product, your service, your experience, whatever. And I guess because you've been so generous with your time already, I'll call that a button on that. I had many more things that I would have loved to have covered.
Well, let's do it again sometime.
Yeah, we will. And we'll call this one approximately a session around that. But I've got a couple more opportunities and questions for you.
Sure.
But first, for folks listening, if you've enjoyed this conversation with Jeff, I want to point you to two almost immediately adjacent episodes. One is episode 253 with Danielle LaPerry-Marith, who's a VP of sales and marketing at Lennar. That one just released. And one that's just a couple of episodes away from this one is with Dermot Buffini. That one will be episode 256. He's the CEO of Buffini and Company. And these themes and topics of humans and tech and communication and connection, all in a commercial context. Both of them have great voices and perspectives into that, as you have, Jeff. Before I let you go, because relationships are our number one core value here at BombBomb, I would love for you to share someone who has been a positive impact on your life or your career.
Well, I mean, two come to mind. Adrienne Duffy at Strategic Coach has been my coach for many, many years. She's just amazing, just incredible. But I think I'm going to go primarily with a gentleman by the name of Eric Elder. He was the chief marketing officer at, it's now KB Home, it was Kaufman & Broad at the time. And when I was thinking about going out on my own, I remember we sat down for breakfast at Jerry's Deli in Westwood, California. And I think the conversation sounded something like, so Eric, if I was like, you know, hypothetically now, if I was like someday going to maybe, you know, like, did you think anybody would hire me? And Eric looked across the breakfast table and he said two things. You'd be a fool not to go out on your own. And two, call me and I will hire you first. And sure enough, somewhere in the office, there's a framed dollar bill from that first assignment. And I think that I always gravitate towards people who can see more in others than those people see in themselves. And Eric is somebody who saw more in me than I saw. And that changes the paradigm, right? The paradigms are influenced by outsiders more than insiders. So a big shout out to Eric Elder.
That's beautiful. I'll just turn that into a call to action for everyone listening. I know that in my own life, I have withheld for no particular reason, except that it wasn't convenient or easy, super positive and meaningful feedback, insights, little gifts to other people. I don't know about you, Jeff, but I think and feel things about other people in admiration or respect or these zones. And like, that's one of the ways that I try to use video. Like I try to keep a list. Anytime these thoughts occur, I write someone's name down. I try to communicate that to them. Not exactly for, and it's not as consequential as the great example you just shared with Eric, these little things, but I feel like so many of us are carrying around what would be tremendous valued gifts that people would never give themselves. They wouldn't recognize that they deserve it. They might not even be, once you present it to them, they're not willing to accept it as deserving. So I really appreciate that call out. How about, and you mentioned a couple earlier when you were talking about we're all capable of really being exceptional in the experience that we deliver. I always like to give people the opportunity to sit in the customer chair. Is there any company or brand that you'd like to give a nod or a shout out to with regard to the experience they deliver for you as a customer?
It's a really interesting example here. I'm going to go with John's Crazy Socks. So if you don't know the story, this is a Downs kid who gets out of high school and doesn't know what he wants to do with his life. And he tells his dad, I want to go into business with you, Dad. And it was like, okay, all right. What do you love? Socks. I love socks. So John always wore crazy socks. And so they went out, they put a little business plan together and they bought a bunch of crazy socks. And they put this horrible, horrible website, which very promptly crashed and it delayed the opening. But if you, to this day, if you go on YouTube and you just search for John's Crazy Socks opening announcement, okay, and you're going to see this video. It's like 30 seconds long of John being interviewed about his new company. And it started out just this very humble, you know, dad and his son doing something for kicks. Now they have a huge staff. They have just thousands and thousands of different kinds of socks. They do it on a sock of the month club. It's a prescription thing. Half of the employees have disabling abilities that they bring into the organization. Every time you get a pair of socks, you get a handwritten note from John and a little package of Skittles because that's his favorite candy. And it's just, you feel like you're a part of a movement. Like try and like, I don't even wear the socks, but try and let your subscription lapse. Try it. See how you feel about yourself as a human being.
So good. So fun. You are a wonderful person. You're wonderful at illustrating the ideas that you brought to this conversation very generously. And you've mentioned a number of things that I tried to keep notes on them. For folks listening, if you go to bombbomb.com/podcast, we do short write-ups on all these conversations. We embed the full audio. We do a handful of video highlights to kind of bring the episodes to life. And there are also links to all of the things that are mentioned. So if you're listening as I do, running, walking, hiking, doing yard work and these types of things, it's always available at bombbomb.com/podcast. And this will be episode 254 with Jeff Shore. Jeff, this has been fantastic. I've enjoyed it so much. I look forward to a day where we can connect in person. And in the meantime, if other folks have enjoyed this, and I assume they have because we're over 50 minutes in now, where would you send them if they want to learn more about you and some of the work that you produce?
Everything available at jeffshore.com, and that'll show you all of our social links. And you mentioned it earlier, the Sales and Marketing Summit. We're going to be in Nashville in July, coming in close to 700 people in attendance. It's going to be the greatest sales and marketing party in the home building industry. So I look forward to seeing you there.
Love it. I love the word party, and I love to know that I'm among 700. Appreciate you so much. Thanks for spending all this time with us.
Thank you, Ethan. It was a blast.
Every single day, you're entrusting some of your most important and most valuable messages to plain black text on a plain white screen, to faceless, typed out text. It doesn't differentiate you, it doesn't build trust and rapport, and it doesn't convey feelings, thoughts, arguments, ideas, or details nearly as well as you do. As a result, your customer experience, employee experience, and business outcomes suffer. So it's time to put you back into your digital communication. It's time to restore human connection across the digital divide with BombBomb Video Messages. They have the clarity and richness of in-person meetings and video calls, and the convenience of asynchronous emails, text messages, LinkedIn messages, and Slack messages. For clearer communication, human connection, and higher conversion, try BombBomb. Record, screen record, send, and track videos in Gmail, Outlook, LinkedIn, Salesforce, Outreach, Zendesk, iPhone, Android, and beyond. Try BombBomb absolutely free or learn how it works for your team or your entire company. Check it out at bombbomb.com.
Thanks for listening to the Customer Experience Podcast. Remember, the single most important thing you can do today is to create and deliver a better experience for your customers. Continue learning the latest strategies and tactics by subscribing right now in your favorite podcast player or visit bombbomb.com/podcast.